Welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. Hello, this is Kim Russo, the director of AGLCA. We are going to talk today with Jim Healy, who is a longtime AGLCA member who also has a very popular blog. And as the holidays approach and many members who are actively cruising the loop are preparing to perhaps leave their boat and return to land for some of the holidays, we thought it would be a great idea to bring Jim on and let him run us through a checklist that he's developed and has on his blog for things to do when you're getting ready to leave your boat. Before we introduce Jim, though, I do want to take a moment to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They're Curtis Stokes and Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, United Yacht Sales of the Carolinas, and Waterway Guide Media. And as always, we encourage all of the loopers out there and anyone else listening to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. With that out of the way, I'd like to introduce Jim Healy. Jim, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Kim.
Why don't we start? I know many members are familiar with you because of the great information that you put in our discussion forum as well as your blog. But for those who aren't, why don't we start if you can just give everyone a little bit of your information on your cruising background.
Sure. After I retired from business, we decided we were going to do something in between doing that and whatever it is that we finally do when we grow up. And we determined that that was going to be a couple of years on a boat. We neither one of us had really been on a boat before, other than as crew and cruising with other people. So this was the first time that we had a boat, and the first time that we actually were responsible for worrying about how to manage it. And so that was in 2004, the end of 2004. We bought the boat in September, splashed, and thought we would head off to Florida, but that didn't happen. We just weren't ready. So we wound up spending that winter in North Carolina at Morehead City. And then after that, we cruise full-time. We live on the boat full-time, cruise full-time. So that summer we spent up on the New York State Canal System, and then we did get to Florida, and we've been coming to Florida ever since, and we did the loop in 2007. And I guess right now we probably have 480 locks and probably around 45,000 miles under the keel while we've owned her. And we're still going at it. We've been aboard 11 years now, and we wonder sometimes how much longer it's going to go on. But for now, we're aboard.
And where are you geographically right now?
We're at Charlotte Harbor. We're in Punta Gorda right now. This is where we spend our winters, seventh season in this particular marina, and I think the 11th season that we've spent in Florida for the winter.
Well, lucky you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk a little bit about your checklist. And you do have a few of them on your blog. But as I mentioned, a lot of loopers that are kind of taking a year or whatever amount of time to do the loop do leave the boat at some point, particularly during the holidays, to either go back to a house on land or to visit with family. So when and why did you create this checklist that you've got on your blog for preparing your boat for when you leave it?
Well, what we found was the very first encounter with this was we got as far as Newbern that first season, and then we knew we were going to, the plan was to go back and visit with our daughter and her family and then see some of our other guys' kids. And so we needed a way to keep track of the things that we just needed to remember. Some of this stuff is easy and you know it all the time, and some of it isn't. You know, you just sort of out of sight, out of mind, and you forget it. So I started the list based on a couple of others that I had seen floating around, and we've perfected it a little bit. It is sort of customized to our particular boat and situation, but it generalizes well, I think, to others. And basically, I break it down into two pieces, stuff that you can do. Typically, we find ourselves in Punta Gorda at least a week to 10 days before we depart. So part of it is getting cleaned up from, you know, a month of cruising south and what have you, and part of it is there's just some stuff you can do in preparation for leaving, and then there's other stuff that you really can't do until you get right down to the day before. So that's the way I structured the list. And if you want, okay. I can sort of start on it, or if you have questions, we can do it that way.
A couple of questions, and then we'll run through the list.
Sure.
Is there a particular time frame that you feel it's appropriate to do these steps if you're leaving the boat for, you know, X amount of time? If it's just a couple of days, do you do all these things, or do you do this if it's going to be a week or more? What's your kind of guideline on that?
Well, that's a good question, and we're sort of flexible about that. If we're going to be away for 2 or 3 days, we don't worry too much about it. I was going to talk about this later, but it's probably a good time to mention it now. We do have a boat monitor on board, and it's a particular piece of equipment that I do recommend to people. This particular boat monitors keep track of things like bilge pump cycles and batteries and shore power. And this particular one I especially like because it's in a sort of a low to midpoint price-wise, so it's very affordable, and it has a lot of features. It does have a built-in GPS, so one of the features it has is a geofence, so I can actually see where the boat is. And the insurance company likes that because if the boat were to move without my authorization, I'd know that right away. I'd get a warning that said the boat has moved. So that's a good thing. If you text to it, you talk to this particular device by texting to it, and so you can turn lights on and off. You can turn air conditioning on and off. You can rig it up so it has an intrusion alarm if you need one. You can rig it up for fire alarm. I mean, if you have smoke alarms or something like that, you can rig it up to sense the smoke alarm going off and what have you. What I use it for particularly is I monitor shore power. So I can tell, even when we're away from the boat, I can tell if the boat has lost shore power. And so we have an inverter on board and a pretty good-sized battery bank for our cruising needs. So I don't have to worry about that immediately. But if the shore power stays off, I know that. And in the morning or, you know, if it's going to be run into the – if it happens in the morning and it's going to be – it's still off after, you know, mid-afternoon, I can make some phone calls and have somebody get on board and actually look at what's really going on. I can monitor my bilge pumps, and so I know how often those bilge pumps run. And if they if the boat acts like it's got a problem, I can get somebody on board. So I do recommend that to anybody that's going to leave the boat. It's like having somebody just sitting there monitoring the boat all the time, and that's very important to us in being able to be away for 2 days at a time, or being able to be away for 3 or 4 weeks at a time over the holidays.
So then with this device that you've got, you wouldn't if it's just going to be a few days, then you wouldn't necessarily execute the full checklist because you do feel like you've got somebody watching.
That's right. That's exactly right. I probably would. We do have propane for the stove, and so I would shut the pot. We've never had a problem with it, but it just seems like a prudent thing to do.
Right.
I would certainly clean out the refrigerator and get any trash or any of that kind of stuff off the boat. But I don't necessarily close through hulls and do all that other kinds of stuff that some folks do. Some of it is judgment, but the full checklist is something that we do when we know we're going to be away from the boat for a couple of 3 weeks.
Okay.
Particularly,
and let's run through the full. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add, particularly if, for example, if we're going to be, if we're in the Chesapeake Bay area in the summertime, I may storm tie the boat because if I'm going to be away even for a short period of time because you get summer thunderstorms and, you know, anything like that might affect the boat. And in Punta Gorda in the wintertime, if we're going to be away for 3 or 4 weeks, you know during that period of time you're going to get a couple of blows for strong winters, you know, cold fronts that come through. So we storm tie the boat. But we always try to have a person also available that could check the boat. And because of the fact that we come back to the same place year after year after year, we do have friends here that can, you know, we can stay in regular contact with if we need help.
And I think loopers will find that in most marinas that they may be tied up at to leave the boat is there's usually someone willing to help. Before we run through the whole checklist, though, what is the device that you've chosen to monitor your shore power and everything else?
Yeah, it's written up on the website under boat monitor, and this particular one is made by Siren Marine, S-I-R-E-N, Siren Marine. It's called a Sprite, and it's about about $600. You can install it yourself, or you can have someone install it for you. Very easy install. You know, it's a little electronic box. You hide it away in a closet, and it texts you. If you set it up when you buy it, you get a text plan with it. It's a machine to machine type text plan. So, it's just fully automatic. You configure it, of course, for your own requirements. And I haven't got all of that stuff documented, but I could certainly add that to the website. Actually, it's probably a good idea to put that out there. I can do that.
Okay. Well, let's start with the checklist then. The day before departure, why don't you go ahead and kind of run us through what you've listed as those steps?
Okay. Well, I'm going to run through some of it very quickly, but the entire checklist is also on the website. Way down at the bottom of the list on the right, there's an area called operating procedures, and this is the securing the boat type of checklist. So before we depart, and I have it listed as day before departure, but it's things like a lot of this you've already done anyway, but it's securing the flybridge, securing the deck, just making sure there's nothing out there that would blow around if the wind got up or whatever. So closing the propane tanks, valves, that depends on when Peg decides she's used the stove for the last time. Closing up instrument covers and things like that, putting them on the actual instruments. We don't do that when we're cruising, but it's a good idea to do it when you're going to be in a place for a long time. We shut off power to everything, mostly as just a safety precaution. It's as much to if you had a summer thunderstorm blow through and you took a lightning hit nearby, it's better to have power off and disconnected than it is to leave it on, is my theory anyway. And the same thing goes for my autopilot. My autopilot the pump itself has a power feed that's fed from the engine room. So I have a little entry on there to turn that off just to remind myself to shut it down. We have two radio antennas, one for an SSB and one for our regular VHF radio. And when I say store and secure them, what I really mean by that is we lower them. My theory is that lightning is attracted to sharp points. With the antenna standing straight up in the air, they're 28 feet up in the air, and they're a sharp point. And I feel like I'm safer with them down, so I just lower them. Same thing with the dinghy. Make sure the dinghy is tied up. Make sure everything is secure. Make sure that the gasoline is actually tied down. We have a deck box, so we lock that or put a tie around it just to keep it from getting open. Any tools that we have I'm always working on something. So one of the things I got to do is just go through the boat and clean everything up, which Peg sometimes appreciates when I do that. And then
that's the nature of having a boat, is always working on something as part of having a boat.
There is always something. Right now, within arm's reach, I have a pair of pliers and a screwdriver. So, it's always that sort of thing.
Right.
Then we have one of the things that I always do is make specific arrangements with somebody who's going to be on the dock, especially when we leave, like for the Christmas holidays. Well, I'll go to one of our boat neighbors and make sure that they're going to be around and call me if you see something you don't like, and I'll call you if I get texted from the boat. And we usually also storm tie the boat, fore and aft spring lines, long lines, not short lines. I personally prefer three-strand nylon. I know some guys like the double braid. I don't care much for the double braid because they're very unforgiving. The three strands, you get more stretch, and I find that better for big tides and big winds. It's just easier on the hard points of the boat. But we storm tie the boat. I on the checklist, I have verified the operation of my little Siren Marine shore power monitor. That's very simple. Just go off and flip the switch, and you should get a text saying that you lost shore power. And then when you flip the switch back on again, you get another text that says shore power has been restored. So I always do that. Close and secure hatches and windows. Some people, my philosophy is we don't, because there are people around who know who belongs on this boat, typically when we're going to be away, leave the boat open. That way anybody who needs to get aboard could. The theory also is, though, I'm not going to lock it because I would just assume if somebody is desperate to get into the boat, I don't want them to break it up to get in. I'd rather not have them have to break in. So then it was because there are people around who know who belongs on the boat, I feel safe doing that.
Okay.
We do have the way our boat is set up, there is a DC feed, a separate DC feed that feeds the propulsion engine. It's the main engine. It feeds all the instruments and all of the controls on the engine, and I just shut that off. There's no specific need to do that again. It's just purely precautionary. I take the key out of the ignition. Normally, the key is in the ignition. It's in the ignition right now. It's always there. But what I do is I take it out and I hide it on the boat where my friends know where it is. We do have a little modified sine wave inverter, and I shut that down. Now, one item that is important is the fridge. People have fridges and freezers, and what we do is we defrost typically. Well, it sort of depends. If the fridge is nearly empty and there's not much meat in the refrigerator, we will give whatever's there to whoever would like to have it on the dock and then just defrost the box and leave it. And we always used to do that before we got the shore power monitor. But after we got the shore power monitor, we both feel comfortable leaving the fridge on and working so that the freezer is... whatever's in the freezer is okay. The refrigerator will run fine for 24 hours, no problem, on battery power on the inverter, and it's a DC refrigerator also, so it'll run on batteries. So if we lose shore power, the problem becomes keeping the batteries charged, and that, as I described earlier, can be done the next morning. So the refrigerator, we get rid of anything that's going to spoil, get rid of milk, get rid of eggs, get rid of any of, vegetables or any of that kind of stuff that's in the refrigerator. And then once it's secure, there's nothing in there that's going to spoil, we just leave it running. And that has worked very well for us for the last 3 or 4 years, and we've had no problems with it. This is probably a good time to mention, too, I'm not a big proponent of putting chemicals in the we drink the water out of our tanks. And I know some people don't, and that's okay. But we do. I have a taste filter, a charcoal filter on the water that we use for drinking water. But we cook and do everything else with water that just comes out of the tank. So what we do, before we leave, before we're going to be away, the tanks have to be filled about once a week. And typically what I'll do is let them run down. And then when we get back, I'll top it off with fresh water, and away we go, and we're fine. Now, some people aren't comfortable doing that. It works for us. We've never, ever, in 11 years, we've never had a problem with the drinking water on it. There's no taste problems. There's no biological issues, no nothing. I am not a fan of putting chemicals to purify water on the boat. I just don't like doing that. It's not good for the plumbing. It's not good for the tanks. So we don't do it anyway. But we do leave the tank half or a little over half empty. That way, when I get back, and we top it off, and there's fresh water in the tanks.
Okay.
So let's see. And, of course, one of the things we do before we leave is pump out. I do not like to leave anything in the tanks. We pump them out and rinse them before we leave in the holding tank. If you have a hose that connects to a pedestal, definitely disconnect the hose from the pedestal and depressurize it and disconnect the water at the boat. One thing that I have seen happen to people is if that hose breaks while you're away, you know, you're going to have water running off the deck at a minimum. And if anything happens inside the boat, we always turn off the water pumps, and you'll see that later, but we always turn off the water pumps so that nothing can happen inside the boat if a pipe should let go, if a connection should let go. So we disconnect the water at the pedestal, and I typically roll up and put the hose away so it's not sitting out in the weather, just not necessary. We stow the TV, we disconnect. Usually when we're going to be away for 3 or 4 weeks, we do have DirecTV, a DVR, and we typically shut all of that down. Just turn it all off, just disconnect it and disconnect the power to it, and that's the way we leave it, and that works for us. Same thing, I've got a little GPS that keeps track of the weather in a location for a weather program that I have, and a bunch of little stuff like that on our I have a pair of earphones that I use to listen to the TV in the morning rather than disturb Peg. So stuff like that is all plugged in up on the Flybridge nav table. And so we just disconnect that. All of that stuff is disconnected. And then that's okay. All stuff you can do ahead of time. And then that brings you to the day of departure. Now, this is actually the day we're going to physically leave the boat. So catching the bus to go to the train, or we're getting the rental car to go to the train, or whatever. And we don't fly, we take the train. It's much more fun to take the train. If I never get on another airplane in my life, that'll be okay with me. So anyway, again, personal preference item. So I need my coffee in the morning, so obviously I make myself a note that says I've removed the coffee filter and cleaned the coffee maker, right? And that's also a good time to empty the trash. Just get the trash right off the boat. Do a final check on dock line and a final check on fender placement. Shore power connection, make sure there's slack in the shore power cord. I have a diagram, you know, I'm obsessive about documentation, and one of the diagrams I have is the location of every through hull on our boat. Any place that water can come through the hull, I've got that documented in a single document. I have a little control book for the boat, and I leave that control book open to that page so that if anything did happen, if I found the bilge pump running, and it was running and cycling and cycling and cycling, suggesting that there's water coming from someplace, now I can call the guy that I have set up to take care of the boat. He can come on board. He's got a diagram of the boat, and he knows immediately where all the through holes are. Most of them are, many of them are closed. Some of them are not, you know, and it's so he can locate them and find them and check them and, you know, whatever. And that, again, that's just, we've never needed that, but I always do it. And then our heat pumps, you know, the air conditioning and heat, our heat pumps, and we set them to dehumidify mode, and I do leave that running. That's one of the things, because of the shore power monitor, I know it runs, and I'm good with that. We have battery-powered smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors, and what I do is pop the batteries out of them. What happens there is one year I forgot to do that, and the CO detectors are Kitty, K-I-D-D-E, Kitty. It turns out that they plug into 110, but when you lose 110, they run on batteries. Well, what happened was I shut off the electric power, so the battery ran down, and we got back, and the battery had killed itself because it had sat there alarming for 2 weeks, you know, that kind of thing. So now I just pop them out and take care of that. We secure the doors, exterior doors, and this is where I shut off AC and DC electrics for the entire boat, except for anything that I'm going to leave on. So as I said, I'm going to leave the heat pumps on, and I'm going to leave the refrigerator on. In fact, my shore power, my sensor for shore power loss is the circuit breaker that runs my refrigerator. So the reasoning behind that was the one thing on the boat that would be most impacted if I lose shore power is what's in the refrigerator. So I use that circuit to monitor shore power. It worked for me anyway. And then we have boarding steps, and I put them on, you know, once Peg is off the boat, when we're leaving, physically leaving for the day, for the period, she's off the boat, then I put the boarding steps away and secure them. and lock up and leave. And that's sort of it. That's the process.
That makes it sound pretty easy. We're going to take a short... I'm sorry. Go
sure,
ahead, Jim.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
We're just going to take a very short break to hear a message from one of our sponsors. And then when we come back, I have a few questions for you, and we'll just kind of wrap things up there. Back in a moment.
Super. Standing by.
Homeport Marina is the Alabama Gulf Coast premier facility, located in beautiful Gulf Shores, Alabama. Amenities include concrete floating docks, 30, 50, and 100-amp electrical services, Valtech gasoline and diesel, phone, cable, wireless internet is available, pump-out facilities, and 24-hour restrooms, showers, and laundry. Homeport Marina is a proud Commander sponsor of the AGLCA. For more information, visit www.homeportmarina.net.
We're back with Jim Healy talking about steps you can take to prepare your boat if you're going to be leaving it for a period of time. Jim, we've run through the checklist. Give me a rough idea on how long it takes you most of the time to run through these steps.
Well, I do it, of course, I do it across a few days. I would guess I probably, by actually doing the tasks while you're going, it probably takes me a grand total of a couple of hours.
Okay. You know, it's, so not bad,
most,
definitely.
I mean, shutting
worth
off
the
a
effort.
Valve and, yeah, right. Oh, yeah, it's not a lot of effort. And what it does for us is it gives us peace of mind that the boat's going to be okay and while we're away. I mean, that's why I do it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you usually have some people that you know in the marina that can kind of keep an eye on things while you're gone. And I'm
yep.
sure in your 11 years you've done the same for others because that's just the nature of boaters. Have there been any circumstances where you've seen something go wrong on a boat while the owner was away from it that perhaps could have been prevented by taking some preparedness steps ahead of time?
Most of the things that I have actually seen happen in that regard, Tim, are related to weather. And what happens is you get a lot of loopers, as you know, have to leave a boat for a short period of time to get on an airplane to go home and take care of family business or whatever it is. And our yacht club has kind of disappointed me that they haven't continued this program, but when we were welcoming loopers, as I would hope that we would have, what would happen would be you get boats would come in and they'd tie up and leave. And then what would happen is you find out that they weren't really tied as securely as they ought to be, and a summer thunderstorm would blow through with a 70 or 80 mile an hour outflow boundary that lasts 15 minutes, and the boat needs to be secured. And it's those kinds of things. When we're there, we try to take care of it. We have done that for boaters. But when you're not there, it surprises everybody how much can happen in just a few minutes of a aggressive summer thunderstorm on the Chesapeake Bay. So that kind of thing, yes. The longer types of things, most looper boats are well-maintained and well-secured. People are careful about them, and so we haven't seen any real significant things happen. I would say being aware of the weather and being aware of how quickly it can turn on you is when you're away from the boat is one of the key things to be attuned to.
Right. Well, and that's good advice for any aspect of boating, not just when you leave the boat. Certainly, we always encourage the loopers out there to be aware of the weather and the changes that can be happening. And many of them
right.
are paying special attention to that right now during this Gulf crossing season. So always important.
Sure, sure.
What other thoughts
right.
do you have for us? Anything else that we haven't covered that you think we should have?
Not that I can think of.
That's why the checklist is so good.
Well, the checklist helps me because I'm prone to forget things. I just forget them. They're out of sight. They're familiar. You know, familiarity it gets away from you. So I use the checklist. And in fact, I would comment about this. We do have several insurance folks that sponsor us, and I certainly appreciate that. One of the things that my insurance guy always used to like is the fact that when I fill out this checklist, and I always keep them, I sign them and date them, and I keep them in a little file. And you know, if anything happens, I can document the last time I took these steps to try and protect myself. So I just pass that along as something that might help you in if something were to happen while you were away from the vote. If you could show that you did what you needed to do in advance, that I think that would help you if you had a claim.
That's great advice, and I'm sure that our insurance sponsors are happy to hear you say that as well, because it is a very good thing for loopers to be doing out there. We are about out of time, and I know we've kind of covered everything on the list. Tell us, Jim, if people have not been to your blog or they're not familiar with it, where can they get to your blog and access this checklist?
Well, the blog is at Gilwell Bear. I can spell it. It's Gilwellbear at wordpress.com. And you'll see a picture of the boat tied up in Baltimore Harbor if you go to that page. And then down the right-hand side, probably a little more than half of it is technical related, and probably a lot of that is AC electric related. And then down below is a whole bunch of the cruising stuff, some of the cruises that we've done. And I don't do a daily blog. I do mostly, this is information for boaters who things they wish they knew the very first time they went someplace, you know, stuff I wish I'd known before I went, kind of.
That's right, and that's what makes Jim and Peg's blog a little bit different than some of the other loopers, is that it's really not a daily travel log kind of blog. It's really not as much his experiences with what he's seeing and doing as he's boating, but more taking care of business, like Jim said,
yeah.
Things he wishes he knew. Lots of really great, detailed, pertinent information. So I encourage people to check that out. You can also access it. Everyone who has entered their blog information at the greatloop.org website, it does show now in our membership directory. So if you look up Jim and Peg Healy in the membership directory, you'll see a link there to their blog as well. So very easy to get to. Jim, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to share this information with us today.
My pleasure, Kim. Anytime I can help, I'm happy to do that.
Well, good. I will definitely have you back, because as I said, there's lots of great information you have to share. So thanks again.
And,
until next time,
we
appreciate everyone.
I was just going to say, Peg and I wish everybody a great holiday season, a safe and great holiday season.
No, thank you, Jim. Same back to you and Peg. And thank you to our listeners out there. We'll be back next week with another episode of Great Loop Radio.